Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. In today's episode, we're talking about a topic that I know we could probably talk to you for hours and hours on end due to, I suppose, the burst it's had over the past couple of years. It's absolutely skyrocketing in popularity. It's the topic of working from anywhere. So joining us to talk about this topic today, we have our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. Hello, Mary. How are you?
Hello, all.
And we're also delighted to be joined by John Lee, a man who speaks six languages, has traveled to over 60 countries, and between his previous senior finance roles and his current role as co-founder of Work From Anywhere, he's got to see firsthand the challenges of dealing with complex tax, employment law, and all those kind of things across multiple jurisdictions. How are you, John? Thanks for joining us.
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for having me on and Mary.
And so, John, we'll jump in and we'll come to you first, if that's all right. So I suppose, John, we've got kind of remote working, we've got flexible working, we've got all these kind of topics that have been bandied around over the past number of years. So I suppose when we talk about work from anywhere in particular, in short, John, what exactly do we mean?
Well, great question. I mean, first of all, you've got to come back and take a look at it from a helicopter level and recognize that there's, you know, if you just talk about remote work for a second, there's a shift in values. You know, we've been around for hundreds of millions of years. We've had a kind of a pyramidic structure of how we manage, you know, companies, how we manage tribes in many ways. That's been around for so many years. And that followed through then to, you know, the Ford management style, the hierarchical management style that's been going for so many years. And what happened basically is back in March and April of this year, the world CEO has more or less said, okay, the pandemic's almost over. We're going back to the office in the next few months. And what happened was, is across so many different industries, the world's employees said, no, we're not going back. And in many ways, it flipped the pyramid upside down. So the power structures and the dynamic completely shifted because of this shift in values. So connecting that to a shift in values, and I suppose asking the question, well, first of all, is remote work here to stay? Is it a structural thing that's changing how we see work, or is it just more of a passing trend? I think it's fair to say, you know, it is here to stay. And with that in mind, you know, work from anywhere, well, what is it? Well, basically, work from anywhere is the concept of allowing your employees to temporarily work remotely abroad for more than 7 days and less than 365 days. Why do I use this definition? And of course, this definition is open to interpretation. The idea behind it is that if you're going for less than 7 days, then you typically fall under the business traveler definition. And you'll be supported by the travel management company and the corporate travel management team in the company, for example. And if you're going for more than 365 days, well, that's where you're going to fall into, let's say, global mobility team and the relocation agencies. That's where, you know, you have a small number of expats who are going permanently abroad for a couple of years, might be going on an assignment for maybe 1, 2, 3, 5 years, whatever it is. I was one of them when I was in CRH. Again, not a huge amount. I'm in very many companies, but they require a lot of sophisticated support. But this is where it gets interesting. This gap between, let's say, more than business traveler time of 7 days and less than the expat time of 365 days, that's where this whole emerging trend is going. And if you look at the searches for work from anywhere, be they permanent job postings of people looking to work remotely abroad, or be they, for example, people looking to temporarily work remotely abroad for more than 7 days, that's 365 days. We're seeing that if you look at Google Trends globally, the search trends are going, you know, up more than 300%. Even when travel restrictions are there and the borders are closed by and large across the world. So you can imagine where this is going to be, for example, in Q1, Q2 next year as travel restrictions ease properly.
Absolutely. I think just kind of building on that, John, I suppose, as you say there, searches further are boosting, all that kind of stuff. It's becoming more popular. I suppose, how do we anticipate how this will look this time next year? Do you think it will be a huge kind of thing, or will it still be kind of a certain minority looking for any kind of numbers?
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, it really depends on the industry. So if you look at, let's say, in some industries, for example, manufacturing industry, you know, they're not going to take a plant and allow the team to go and work from anywhere over in a beach in Thailand. That's just not going to work. They're very much stuck in one location. Similarly, for, you know, heavy regulated financial industries, for example, they are also, they've got some, let's say, state barriers and regulatory barriers that prevent them from doing that, doing so, for example. Likewise, if you're in a tech company with extremely tight data security requirements. But in general, you know, if your company does have a high percentage of remote workers, and certainly if you've got competitors that are looking to offer work from anywhere, then this has got to be on your agenda. And some reports, some numbers to kind of throw in the mix there. Gartner, they recently did a report where they basically said 51% of the world's global knowledge workers will be remote by the end of 2021. So there's 1 billion knowledge workers in the world. Half of them, 500 million, will be remote by 2021. And we think that's going to end there. It certainly won't. There'll be more and more remote workers as we go further. Another one that'll jump out at you is Qualtrics. They did a survey a couple of months ago. And if you look at it, 80% of employees looking for a new job said it was important for them that their next job offer them the opportunity to live anywhere. We're already seeing as well, take a look at LinkedIn posts as well. LinkedIn posts with work from anywhere in them, job postings, there's over 250,000 of them there already. And so this is something that, again, it's not a passing trend. This is definitely a structural trend. This is a structural thing that's changing how we see work. And again, it's linked to very much where remote work is going.
Absolutely. And I think, I suppose, getting into the nitty gritty then, John. So I know your company, your venture, Work From Anywhere, they do give tons of advice on this topic and I suppose every kind of facet of it. I think one key area where you do give advice that we've, you know, from talking to you is around the area of taxation. So are there any glaring kind of, I suppose, tax implications for a company if all their employees or a good chunk of their employees work from anywhere? What are the kind of implications there in that regard?
Yeah, there's multiple ones. I mean, if we first start off with individual income tax, for example. So some countries have residency days of 30 days. Some of them have residency days of 365 days. And that's where it gets interesting, is that if you're going from one country to another, it really depends. You can actually, for example, in the US, trigger residency days very, very quickly, for example. And whereas in other countries, like, for example, in, if you look at maybe in Dubai, you know, they have 0% income tax to start with, but they have a very, very different structure for residency days as well, for example. So it really depends on country to country. So that means for an employee, you know, some people have this idea that it's 183 days in every country. It's absolutely not. It's completely dependent on the country that you're going to. So you could accidentally trigger tax residency in a country without actually realizing it. And that has huge implications for you as an individual, but also for your company as well. Social Security, that's another one as well. So the corporate travel management departments will already know this, for example, where you've got this concept of A1 Social Security forms, for example, that business travelers are supposed to have. What does that mean for remote workers? You know, you need to have a look at your Social Security structure. Is there double taxation agreements for Social Security and for also individual tax? So Social Security is one to watch out for. A major one, though, and the biggest one by far, is the concept of permanent establishment, which is all around corporation tax. And very simply, if you've got, let's say, a CEO of a company that wants to go work in their house in the south of France for, let's say, more than 6 months a year, for argument's sake, you know, if they're signing contracts, if they're doing negotiations and doing selling, you know, they're, especially if they have like a sales team out there as well, potentially, straight away, you have a massive risk of permanent establishment. So permanent establishment, what exactly is it? As I said, it's related to triggering a taxable presence in a country. That basically means that country now can go after the corporation tax profits in that particular country. So how does it trigger? It's triggered, for example, a couple of, let's say, triggers that you have quite common across a lot of countries. It'll depend on the enforcement levels of different countries and how they see it. It's not the same in every single country, but there are some broad, let's say, principles that apply. The first one is that if you're sending a senior director abroad, that's definitely a risk. Secondly, what about sales generating employees? They're a huge risk as well. You know, if in combination with the above, you know, straight away, the local tax authorities could make an argument of permanent establishment. What about agents? What if you use agents, for example, third parties in a country? And for example, if they have decision-making authority to, again, write contracts or whatnot, just to name a few, that can be another trigger as well. It also depends on the place and the nature of work as well. If it's a fixed place of work, the nature of the place, who pays the rent, how it's done, for example, those questions can then potentially trigger permanent establishment. The time side of it as well. If somebody's going for less than 30 days, they're highly likely to trigger permanent establishment. But if they're going for a couple of months, again, very, especially if there's a number of employees going to that country, that can be a risk as well. You've got services permanent establishment, not quite as big a risk, but certainly a risk. And what that means is that if you've back office employees going to a country, yes, it's not as risky as sales employees, but if you have a significant number of them, that can still be a risk as well. And the last one, which is another one that's evolving quite rapidly, is the concept of virtual permanent establishment. The idea here is if you have digital sales, for example, or a digital presence, could be like hosting servers or whatnot in a country, in combination with some of the factors above, that can trigger permanent establishment as well. You know, there are a number of other factors as well, such as, for example, transfer pricing or the substance risk as well. And there's a lot of other ones to watch out for. But, you know, the main ones would be number one, permanent establishment. And number two, for example, you've got the likes of the individual tax risk for the individual in any case for tax residency. That can be an issue.
Absolutely. So a lot to think about. Coming to yourself, Mary, for the next one, maybe. So I think a lot of HR teams out there would be thinking, look, this working from anywhere, remote working trend is really taken off. They don't want to be left behind because a lot of their competitors are doing it if they can, as John said, in certain industries. I suppose, so if a HR team is tasked with developing a work from anywhere policy, what's the kind of first steps? Do they look at tax implications, like John is saying, or do they go out to the population first to see is it fit for purpose? What would you suggest is the approach?
It's a really good question, Owen. And, you know, there, those requests are actually coming in. So they're probably few and far between for a lot of HR departments, but they're typically arising, say, with foreign nationals who actually want to work from home, and they have the opportunity to actually return to their locations now and keep their job and return from home. So from a HR perspective, you know, the taxation implications alone mean that it cannot be HR owned project. These things have to be worked out at an executive level before HR ever write a policy. And we've been approached by so many of our clients to say, you know, we're thinking of a work from anywhere policy or, you know, offering that in an effort to attract and retain staff. Can you help us write a policy? And we're standing back and saying, no, you've got to consider all of the implications. And we've just got a flavor of some of them from John. So we'll give an indication that, you know, HR cannot do this kind of a project alone. And the organizations actually need specialist advice in this area before they accidentally create a situation that has a taxation implication for the company, or that allows a change in the terms and conditions of employment for an employee. Because imagine yourself in a situation where you've allowed something to happen accidentally and you have an employee insisting that it's now a term and condition of their employment, and yet be dealing with a whole myriad of complex taxation issues and other issues at an organizational level. So I would say HR departments and practitioners, beware, make sure you're getting good advice.
I think maybe just to tie into that as well, Mary, you're raising a very, very good point. There's no doubt about it. This is a cross-functional effort. Yeah, it needs to be led by the executive team in many ways, really, from the top down. But coming into the risks, I mean, I mentioned some of the tax risks, for example, corporation tax, permanent establishment, personal income tax, Social Security. But the other ones to think about, just a sample of the other ones as well, you've got the whole immigration visa side of it. If somebody can't get a visa there, well, that's never going to work. Employment law as well. You know, some people think, oh, we'll solve this by hiring people as contractors abroad, but then you run into the misclassification risk, which can be a huge risk as well, amongst other things. The assurance side of it as well. You know, somebody can't go on a typical travel insurance. They have to have, you know, remote working insurance that's offered by the likes of, you know, Insured Nomads and Safety Wing. There's specific companies that offer specialized insurance packages for this. The duty of care side is another one as well. What happens if they have an accident? Or from the ergonomic side, what's going to happen there? The duty of care side can trigger a bunch of other risks on the back of it. The data privacy and security side was also another one as well. And I think lastly, and potentially most importantly, is the whole talent management and benefits side of it. So if you don't offer this, and if you have competitors offering it, what does that mean for, you know, the leakage of talent, of your best talent leaving? What's the price of that? What's the cost of that? Do we weigh that up when deciding whether or not to offer this or not, and how to offer it? So I think there are some of the things that we see quite frequently that, you know, you've got to weigh this up in a holistic way, in a cross-functional way, in a very thoughtful way. And like you say, yeah, it's not just one function doing it, I guess.
And it's probably also something that you shouldn't just write off as an organization either, because, you know, certainly when we've been working with some of our clients about putting in place, you know, either employee-centric models around where and how they work, or those kind of things, that they've just said, no, it's too complicated for now, so we're not going to allow anybody to work from abroad. But if you have a significant cohort of employees who, you know, wish to have, you know, mix that life experience with work and travel, for instance, in terms of being a digital nomad, or even just, you know, relocate for a certain number of months a year to another country, you can't just write it off. So I think for each organization over time, you're going to have to look at, well, who is this going to appeal to? How important is it from an attraction and retention perspective? And what are we going to do about it? I don't think you can just write it off.
Absolutely. I think just, I suppose, kind of building on that, Mary, is it a case then whereby, I suppose, should companies now be thinking about it, and HR teams be thinking about developing a working from anywhere policy in the hope that they can promote that as a benefit, promote that as a thing that they do in the future? Or should they now, or should they more be focusing on, I suppose, waiting until their requests come in, waiting until their population says, yes, we'd like to do this? I suppose, is this kind of one before the other, or is it more of a kind of a holistic approach, like we say?
Yeah, I'm not a great fan of just waiting until there's demand. And, you know, that demand is usually represented in people walking out the door and talent shortages. You know, bottom line, what are we in HR there to do other than to ensure that the organization is adequately resourced to deliver on the organizational strategy? The world of work has changed. There's a fundamental shift in what people want. That's going to change further as more and more young people come into the workforce. And as, you know, countries adapt and create digital hubs and places where people can go and actually work remotely. So, you know, even my own son, I spoke about last weekend, he talked about, you know, traveling as a student, but not really wanting to do bar jobs and waiting jobs, and instead talking about retaining a part-time job as a knowledge worker and bringing his laptop along with him wherever he goes. That's new. That's not how young 20-year-olds have ever traveled in the past, or rarely traveled in the past. So I believe there will be a demand, and HR teams need to be thinking about it. Leading the discussion is different from being responsible for its entire implementation. Starting the discussion at a senior leadership level or with the CEO is different to taking full responsibility for all elements of it. It's a cross-functional organizational challenge, and each section will have to look at it carefully. Again, a working group, a steering committee, those kind of things will help in terms of establishing demand, what the organization is going to do, what needs to be done, and of course, specialist advice.
I think maybe just to go on that as well, what's crucial is that companies don't make the same mistake that was made with remote work earlier this year, whereby we could see that remote work was going to be something important. The companies then surveyed their employees, and the employees came back and said, we want flexible working for the most part. The companies that really suffered from, a talent attrition perspective were the ones that ignored what their employees told them. And as a result, they walked out the door, and we have the great professional migration, you know, that we've seen since. So there's an opportunity now to be proactive about this, and to, I think, first of all, just survey your employees on the one hand to see what they're looking for, but also survey the external landscape to see what are your competitors in your industry, in the country you're in, and in other countries, for example, what are they doing? And then trying to understand the best practices around that to try and see what's right for you. I think the next stage then is to sit down as a cross-functional team and do a proper workshop where, in many ways, you all of the, as a cross-functional way, discuss what are the risks, you know, from a holistic way, and what are the benefits, and trying to understand, you know, where in the motorway do you want to go? What do I mean by that? Well, you know, we all have, let's say, been in a motorway and you have 120 kilometer speed limit, and how many of us go a little bit over every now and again? Well, yes, it happens every now and again. Some people go 122, some do 125, sometimes some do 130, some crazies do 150 every now and again. The ones going extremely high past the speed limit, they're going to get caught by the police, by the guards, and then they're in serious trouble. It's the consequences are much more significant for a commander if you get it wrong from that perspective. They can look back in your past 5 years, for example, and more, there can be significant fines and more potentially. So you have to weigh that up. But I think it is important to understand that as a team to weigh up, okay, how much of a benefit will this be? How much of an edge will this give us for employer brand, for employee benefit? But then what are the risks? What are the biggest risks? Like, for example, permanent establishment, that should be non-negotiable. We should never, ever, ever want to get into a situation where we could trigger permanent establishment. Whereas, for example, an A1 social security form, for example, many companies do business travel. You technically need an A1 social security form if you're going for an hour to another country. But many companies have a risk framework in place where they say, well, if you're going above a certain number of days, then we'll go get the A1 social security form, et cetera, go from there. So that's very much taking that risk appetite, risk framework, where you're looking, okay, what's the cost of implementing this? What's the risks? What are the costs, for example, if this goes wrong? And it's very much, as I said, looking at that kind of speed limit on the motorway. And as a company, for you, figuring out what level and do you want to invest in and how much do you want to be conscious of the risk and manage and mitigate it, let's say.
And similar to that, I think, John, and I suppose it's a good point that we've seen you speak about in the past as well, it's when you are crafting these work from anywhere policies, remote working policies, there can be this issue of office bias or at home bias in the way that I suppose companies can craft these policies. Can you talk to us a little bit about that kind of concept?
Yeah, it's the concept of proximity bias is one that we see that's emerged whereby it's fascinating. You've had these companies that have experienced remote work during a pandemic, which is not optimal remote work. And then all of a sudden now, as we kind of see, we're getting the other end of the pandemic, companies are going back to the office. What has happened? Well, essentially companies have gone into three different modes. They've either gone into office first, remote first, or hybrid. The vast majority have been hybrid. People like Rowena Hennigan, Laurel Ferry of Distribute Consulting, these people talk about, you know, hybrid being highest risk and highest reward. And what did I mean by that? Well, if you think of hybrid, companies going in, not intentionally, but just going in hybrid, and let's just see how we get on, that's extremely risky. And what do I mean by that? If you look at, for example, if you're going hybrid, look at how you communicate. Do we communicate synchronously, as in on the same time video calls or in the office, or do we communicate asynchronously, which is a completely different approach? We do everything via Loom or Yak, or we do it in a Slack document or Google Doc in advance. And we only have a meeting when there's a very high threshold that's met. But the problem is if as a company you go in hybrid and not understanding where your bias is, with a hybrid with a bias remote or hybrid with a bias for the office, can lead to all sorts of issues like this, like proximity bias, for example. So there's a lot of intentionality needs to go into this, going back to make sure that as much as possible, you reduce the inequality and that everyone has a fair shake at it, whether they're going into the office or whether they're working remotely, whatever it is. When it comes to work from anywhere, absolutely, it's the same element needs to be thought of. If you're offering work from anywhere, you also need to be conscious of the inequalities around that. Like if somebody isn't able to get a visa to go to a country, how do you deal with that? How do you manage that in a way where, you know, as much as possible, you're able to offer to as many people as possible in a way that manages the risks, including, for example, this inequalities that you can run into. It's a very tricky balancing act, but we've already seen companies like, for example, HubSpot, they're offering work from anywhere. They've pushed it, you know, they're offering 90 days work from anywhere, and they're using it as a way to get the best talent. You know, there's many other companies as well, that Revolut GitLab, there's many more that are offering these work from anywhere policies, Spotify, that are using it as a way to get the best talent. But you're absolutely right in raising it as one of the points that we need to be watching out for.
Where would people find information on the kind of percentage uptakes that there might be for, you know, if you look at somewhere like HubSpot, you know, many people are taking up on those offerings? Is it a small percentage or are there quite a number of employees traveling?
So we break into two different aspects. So you've got domestic work from anywhere and international work from anywhere. Domestic work from anywhere, the uptake has been huge. And it's actually running, to give you an example, in the US, there's been so many employees that, for example, let's say worked in New York and then moved to you know, Massachusetts or a few other different states around New York, and has actually triggered massive tax, cases between the different states in the US because this migration of the tax base from one state to another. But basically, there's been a huge uptake in the likes of remote work within a country. For remote work international, the borders have still been closed in many cases. So the companies haven't seen, you know, the companies that have even been offering this, there's been too many blockages from just even the COVID restrictions perspective to really see where this market is going. We won't know how big this is until, you know, Q1 next year, on the basis that COVID cases come down and that restrictions open up. We're starting to see a lot more countries open up now at the moment as well. What's also tricky is that for the companies that have enabled work from anywhere, it's not like they've said, oh, everyone can go anywhere you want. The vast majority have said, okay, you're only able to go to certain countries where we have a legal entity, typically, for example. And for example, in some countries, they've said, okay, we're only going to allow people from these two or three nationalities to do a limited work from anywhere. And we've seen also, you know, the likes of, for example, Facebook, they've said, we're going to start off in these one or two countries and broaden it out to other countries where we have a legal entity eventually. So it's not like a wide open go to anyone to 220 countries. It's not like if somebody wants to go to North Korea in the morning, well, sorry, you can't get a visa. We've got permanent establishment risk. You know, we can't get you even in there. We're not, the data might not be safe. So I think it's very much thinking about, you know, work from anywhere is a total myth. Work from anywhere in a limited number of countries, yeah, that's possible. Looking at where, for example, we've legal entities or where we can mitigate it through, for example, employees of record or making sure that we can understand what are the local tax and employment law and other risks that we can at least understand before we go in there. I'd say absolutely critical.
So I think, I suppose it'd be kind of remiss if we didn't kind of talk about our own kind of thoughts around this growing trend. I suppose, Mary, as someone, you've kind of spoken about working from anywhere a lot, and you've given our own team here great flexibility with it. You've even kind of tested the waters yourself. So what are your kind of thoughts on this growing trend for you?
Personally, I would love to, you know, work from anywhere as it suited me. I've never been a big fan of, you know, buying a home, a second home or a third home somewhere or other, because I'd always have to go there. And I like to travel and I like to have different experiences, but I would like to have deeper experiences when I travel. I have done a little bit of research around where I might go, where there might be a digital hub. And unfortunately, they're few and far between, in terms of, do I want to establish a base there? I would ideally like to be able to go somewhere where there is a co-working space and accommodation nearby so that I could actually go safely on my own and stay for up to 3 months and then move to another location. I do think in some of the countries that I'd like to go to anyway, you know, there is a requirement to prove you have a certain level of income as well. So it's not for everybody in all locations. But I'm looking forward to seeing the rise of those kind of spaces where people like me can decide to work from a different country for a number of months per year without establishing a permanent residence. But, you know, I run this company. I run it remotely as it is for the last 2 years. So I now know I can do that. But what the tax implications are for doing that, I definitely don't want to pay more taxes. That's for sure.
As it is. So I think, it's a trend that obviously it's going to, it's on the rise. And I think next year we'll see a lot, as you said there, John, we'll see a lot next year about where this trend is really going. And to be honest, it's exciting times in this regard. And so we will see what else happens over the next couple of years, I suppose. Because I think one thing you mentioned there very early on in the podcast, John, was we have seen that kind of shift in values. There has been that, I suppose, pyramid hierarchical kind of scheme of work has been flipped upside down. So there has been a big, huge change. It's still going on. So next year, I think we'll see a lot more interesting, I suppose, discussion and research and hopefully some data in this area.
Actually, on the research point, that's exactly what we're doing. We're in the process. We just launched a Work From Anywhere white paper project where we're basically surveying and interviewing some of the leaders in the world in the space in global mobility, in HR, in finance, and tax and legal to try and get a sense of what the companies that are leading in this space are doing from work from anywhere, and also the companies that say no to work from anywhere. Why is it? What are the risks? What are the people, you know, what are the ways people approach this? Who are the stakeholders driving it, for example? You know, what are the operational aspects to be conscious of? So we expect to launch that in January. So that should be one to keep an eye on. If anyone has any question on that or wants to participate in this, they're more than welcome.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and we'll post the link, John, in our show notes so that any of our listeners who want to contribute to your research, which is so important because there's not really much out there at the moment. So we'd encourage people to actually participate in that research so that we can all benefit from it.
Thank you very much, Mary. Appreciate it.
Keep an eye out for those kind of resources. We'll hopefully be sharing some useful resources in the new year as well around this topic, because as we said, I think everyone will take as much help as they can get in this topic. So thank you again, Mary and John, for a very insightful discussion. Again, we got through a lot and hopefully that has helped people thinking about crafting these policies, thinking about doing it themselves. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. Make sure to check the show notes, as we said, for some useful resources, and also over the next couple of months as this topic does kind of gather some more traction. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust, get in touch with us today at insidehr.ie. Thank you, Mary. Thank you, John.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Inside HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insidehr.ie/podcast. That's www.insidehr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Inside HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.